Hello, ladies and gentlemen. This is Parsa Benamri here, host of the Show ATL podcast, and we are back with new episodes. We have been away for a few months and out of your listening ears, but we've been away working on a lot of strategy and some really cool projects and initiatives for Show ATL for 2019 and beyond. And we are really, really excited to share those things with you. So please be on the lookout for announcements on this podcast and online in the weeks to come. So really excited about that. But we're back with some announcements that are a little more immediate that I want to rattle off before this episode gets started. The first of which is that we have brought on a new team member. Coleman is going to be joining us to work on all things podcasting. Coleman is an audio guru, a wizard of editing and podcast production, and he's going to help us take this show to new heights and help us create a better and more consistent listening experience for you, our wonderful listeners. Coleman, really cool guy. Really excited to have you on board. Really excited to see where we're going to grow together. Welcome to the team. Second announcement is that with Coleman on board, we are going to move away from a seasonal release cycle to a weekly release cycle. That means instead of dropping a bunch of episodes all at once every 6 to 8 weeks, we are going to be dropping a new episode of the Show ATL podcast every single week into your inbox and wherever you listen to your podcasts on Monday morning. So with the exception of maybe 1 or 2 weeks throughout the year, be expecting a new episode of the Show ATL podcast every week. The final announcement is kind of more of an ask to you, our listeners. We're a small team, growing team, but still a small team, putting a lot of time and energy and effort into making this kind of the best listening experience, best podcast that we can, along with a lot of other projects that we're working on. And we would love your support. If you are a fan of this show, if you enjoy listening to this show, if you enjoy the content, if you enjoy the guests, if you enjoy knowing more about your city, whatever it is, consider donating to us. We have a Patreon up. It's www.patreon.com/showATL. And you can donate as much or as little as you would like. So you can go on there and give a one-time donation, or if you feel so inclined, to do a recurring donation of $1 or $2 per month. And if you do that, we'll be sure to follow up with you, and we would love to send you a Show ATL kind of gift pack with some cool swag from Show ATL. So again, that's patreon.com/showATL. We would be honored and grateful for your support and for your contributions. And finally, if you like this show, please consider giving us a good review or a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or whatever you use to listen to your podcasts. It helps us improve, helps us grow, helps us continue to deliver awesome content to you, the listeners. With that kind of long-winded set of announcements out of the way, we are pleased to give you another fresh episode of the Show ATL podcast with many, many more to come. Thank you. Today, I have the pleasure of sitting down with Phil Harris. Phil is an ATLian who is a full-time EMT paramedic for a fire department, as well as a full-time visual mixed media artist. We had a really, really good talk, which was kind of interrupted a couple times by some external noises of landscaping equipment. But Phil and I talk about kind of his journey of getting into art and then getting out of art and getting back into art. And how that work has kind of evolved over time, how he's become a major fixture in the kind of current art scene in Atlanta through different studio shows and murals and collaborations and just getting to know the Atlanta arts community more intimately and building those relationships. We talk about symbolism and his views on symbolism in his work, as well as symbolism and meaning in art in general. And just kind of talk about his style and how he sees his kind of dual roles as a firefighter, paramedic EMT, and as an artist. So, yeah, it was great. Phil's an awesome guy. Phil, looking forward to catching up with you, sometime in the future. And yeah, enjoy today's episode with Phil Harris.
Any given moment, we know what the world is feeling. Are you wearing pajama pants to school? Why, yes, I am.
I was, in a way, elevating him. I was celebrating him.
We wanted to build a beer pong table.
No, it's the Show ATL podcast. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to another episode of the Show ATL podcast. We are sitting today with the man himself, Phil Harris. Welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me.
We are enjoying some coffee here on a warm day in an even warmer kind of studio, and you are wearing a long sleeve shirt.
Yeah.
And jeans. So I commend you for being heat resistant.
Well, I was just trying to be comfortable.
Yeah.
So usually everywhere I go, it ends up being freezing cold. So I was like, I'll put on a sweatshirt. And I think that was probably a bad idea.
That's okay. You're used to heat.
Yeah.
And that's a little cryptic, but you are a volunteer firefighter and paramedic, or full-time
career,
firefighter and paramedic?
Career, yeah, full-time paid. So it's more the paramedic part of it is more what I do, more than most fire departments. They're out of their call volume, you know, probably only 20% are fire calls.
Okay.
And 80% are medical calls. So,
got it.
The majority of what we do is we run medical calls. The fires are pretty few and far in between.
Got it. Yeah. So, we're kind of jumping right into the meat of the content, but that to me was just super fascinating when I first met you. I think it was at the was it the Family Hood?
Yeah, Family Hood show.
That's right. The Family Hood show, what, like 3 weeks ago?
Yeah.
I want to say.
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah, and you were telling me about how you do, along with your art, this parallel life of being a full-time paramedic firefighter. So what is, you were one of the few artists that I've met who has that kind of striking of a contrast in terms of their professional life.
Yeah, so, it's really weird. It's definitely, I'm almost kind of feel like it doesn't give me as much credit as an artist that I'm also like doing this other thing full time that's completely unrelated. But I've been doing it for almost 10 years now.
Wow. Okay.
So it pays the bills. It's something I got into after I left art school.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, went a long time without making any art. So I'm used to doing it. It's a stable income.
Right.
And I'll probably keep doing it for a while, to be honest.
And I imagine that provides, it just makes your schedule, like you seem like a fairly busy and prolific person. Not busy in a bad sense. You seem like a productive person. You seem to produce a lot, despite the fact that you also have what seems like a fairly demanding day job.
Yeah. I definitely stay busy. I don't get a lot of sleep. Because basically my schedule is I work every third day for 24 hours.
Okay.
So, you know, I go to the fire station for 24 hours. If I'm lucky, I'll get to sleep at night, but that's not always the case.
Mm.
You know, I could be up all night running calls, and then I get home and I've got a deadline. So I have to work, you know, 12 to 18 hours the day I get home after having no sleep. So yeah, I stay very busy.
You don't look like someone who doesn't get a lot of sleep. I would imagine this kind of worn out, raggedy, tired looking artist. And you seem just like incredibly calm, put together. What is that balance like for you if you're spending every third night not sleeping and still kind of producing art at the rate that you do?
It kind of depends. I mean, I do get some downtime here and there. I am usually perpetually tired all the time.
Yeah.
Maybe I just don't show it, but my wife sees it. Like, it's game over. If we lay down on the couch to watch a movie at night, I can't stay awake.
Right.
But yeah, you know, I just try and roll with the punches and not let it stress me out too bad, you know, when I'm juggling a bunch of different things at once. And just do the best I can, you know?
Yeah, I get that. I think we're all kind of trying to do the best we can, but congratulations are in order. Before we get into kind of the whole story and getting to know you a little bit better, you have been, with your artwork, extremely busy and you're showing a lot and you're doing a lot of work lately. So congrats on that. Namely, you are about to do a live painting for the Outer Space Project.
Right. Yeah. Well, it's for the Big Bang block party where right. it kind of the culminates. It's the culmination at the end of the week long outer space thing. Mm-hmm. And yeah, that's coming up Saturday. Yeah. So it's going to be pretty cool. It'll be my first time doing it. I'm looking forward to it.
Really? That's all. It's so for people who don't know what the Outer Space Project and the Big Bang is, it's hosted by ABV Terminal West, and I believe it's sponsored by Heineken.
That's right, yeah.
And maybe a few other sponsors that I'm not aware of, but it's a week-long mural project throughout the city that has, I want to say, somewhere like 12 to 16
That's right,
muralists yeah. throughout the city, so. Including Nikki Zarabi, who's been on this show, and, I mean, a bunch of other people whose names
yeah, I think it's like half Atlanta artists and about half of artists from elsewhere in the country. And
the world, I know, because there's some there's an artist from Mexico, there's an artist from Europe, Scandinavian artist in there. So,
and I think one of the guys too doing Big Bang, he's from Canada. So they've got a good mix of artists. Yeah, I've been following Nikki and what she's been doing all week because you know the murals are taking place right now.
That's so. Right. Yep.
And Ildez, some of the other guys. It's pretty cool. It's coming together real nice.
Yeah, it's a really cool way to showcase art and give back to the city at the same time, because it's this week-long kind of sprint to create art and to showcase artists, but also it leaves a permanent impact on the city because you're putting up these beautiful pieces of art in Absolutely. These massive public spaces. And
it's good too, because they do, you know, they do it each year. So
yeah,
every year it's something new.
So do you know what you'll be painting or how you will be painting? Have you kind of been briefed on that, or is there?
No, I know there's going to be, I believe it's going to be like an 8-foot by 8-foot canvas.
Wow. Okay.
And so it's big enough that I can do spray paint, which will make it'll go pretty quick.
Right.
As opposed to like some of the studio art I do. It'll be more in line with like painting a mural because right. the canvas is so big. So we're typically like a smaller piece that I work on in the studio would take a really long time to do. Just using spray paint, I can knock it out, you know, in like 4 to 6 hours.
Wow. Okay.
And I'll just approach it the same way I approach everything else. I never typically start out with like a concept on a piece of paper that I'm referring to and trying to replicate it on a wall or on a canvas. It's typically all just improvised. I just kind of do whatever comes out.
Okay.
So that's the plan. Yeah.
Very cool. Well, I'm unfortunately out of town for a wedding this weekend, but uh-huh. I know a ton of people who are going to be there. Corrigan will probably be there, my show ATL partner. So
okay.
Excited to see the outcome of that. I've been at the last two Big Bangs.
Really?
Which have been just a blast. I mean, yeah. just the combination of the art, the music. There's usually like some like skateboarding
yeah.
set up over there. It's just a lot of fun.
Yeah, so, I'm looking forward to it because I've actually never been. I think like the past couple of years, each day it's ended up being like a fire department work day. So I haven't been able to make it, but I'm really excited about it.
Yeah, that's cool. Awesome, man. Congratulations. But
thanks.
But in line with that, just on the theme of you being so kind of prolific and busy, this year you've done Forward Warrior. Mm-hmm. Your work was just up at Kylan Art for Sublime.
Right.
You were also there for Fresh 2, Drink and Doodles, multiple. Your work was up at ABV Gallery.
No, I've just done the Drink and Doodles. I've actually never been featured at ABV Gallery.
Okay, but Drink and Doodles and now working with ABV for Outer Space.
Sure.
You've done Stack Squares recently.
Mm-hmm.
You've collaborated with numerous Atlanta artists, Blockhead, yeah. Jeremy Brown.
Lila,
yep.
If I can't say their name, I hope they don't hold it against me. But
well, I mean, the point I want to illustrate is that you've just been... You've done a lot of work with a lot of people in a lot of different mediums.
Right.
And have become this fairly influential name in the Atlanta art scene, which is, I mean, pretty cool.
Yeah.
Your art is very recognizable. Your style is in demand, clearly. Yeah. I guess I just kind of want to figure out how we got to where we are today with you being this powerhouse Atlanta artist. So I know that art has always kind of been a part of your fiber.
Sure.
But you've had this kind of winding career path since your you know, adolescent dream of getting into art. You said, you mentioned that you've always seen yourself as having a future in art, and I've done a little bit of kind of independent research on you.
But. Absolutely, yeah. I mean, there's been so many different like twists and turns throughout from, you know, my college years up until this point now. Definitely when I was younger in high school, I think is when I really knew I had a future in art because I loved my art class in high school. I had a great teacher. I didn't really know exactly what I was going to do. I ended up studying illustration and animation in college, but never really anticipated that I would have end up doing like studio art murals eventually one day. And it was probably good that I left art school and took a lot of time off. And then I was able to kind of get back into it as an adult after I've settled down and have a better feel for knowing what I want in an art career. I didn't totally stop doing art after I left art school. I was doing paintings here and there, mostly just for fun and whatnot. It was after I settled down with my wife and she really encouraged me to get back into it because she knew my background too. And
right.
Because we used to be roommates way before we got together.
Okay.
And so she would see me around painting. And then finally, once we got together, then she encouraged me to get back into it. And it was tough when I knew that I wanted to establish a career as a full-time artist. Mm-hmm. When I got to that point, I just started working nonstop and just painting and doing whatever came out. But like finding your identity as an artist, even if you have like a formal education after you've taken that much time off, it took 2 to 3 years to really get to where I was doing something consistently enough that people could probably recognize it.
Right.
My first solo show looks absolutely nothing like what I'm doing now.
Really?
Yeah.
When was that? When was that first solo show?
That was, let's see, that was 2016.
Okay.
Yeah.
So
it was a great show. I was really happy with the work, but totally different.
Right.
So, and that was just, I continued to develop new ideas. And I think the big thing was, not placing any constraints on myself and still being creative and trying different things, that maybe I might not normally consider.
Mm-hmm.
And it just kind of turned into its own thing, I guess. It's difficult to describe.
Yeah. You went to the Atlanta Art Institute, correct? Art Institute of Atlanta.
Yeah, I can't remember what it's called.
But what was the decision to study animation? Where did you originally kind of want to go with art, I guess? You've hit these two kind of critical points in your life where you decided to pursue art and then you decided to pursue art again.
Mm-hmm.
So where were you in that first decision point of I am going to go to school for art, and then what happened? And then how did that second decision point kind of come around and reinsert itself into your mind?
Well, I guess when it came time to pick out of college, I couldn't see myself doing anything but art.
Mm.
You know, I didn't want to go to art, school and do like a BFA or something like that. It just wasn't a right fit for me. So I knew I wanted to go to art school. And at the time, I was really influenced by animation a lot. Traditional animation, not computer animation, but that was going to be a part of what I was studying at school. And there's some films like Akira and Ghost in the Shell, films like that, that really had a big influence on the way I viewed art and perceived art and what I liked. And so it was just a natural fit for me to pick that.
Mm.
And there's a lot of illustration involved in that as well. In terms of down the road, when I started getting into studio art, my taste had matured a lot more as an adult. I'm not really into animation, you know, these days, to be honest. But I've definitely always been into studio art murals.
Mm.
And I think living in Atlanta, after a while, it just had such an influence on me because it's everywhere here. And it just kind of all fell into place. I just started painting again. And it was just... I think I got much more into the work I was seeing at galleries and the murals I was seeing, and it resonated with me much more than the things that resonated with me back in my college years. And so I just started painting again, and it was just kind of a natural fit.
what were you doing career-wise at the time that you decided to get back into art? And did that have any influence on getting back into painting?
Yeah, I was doing the fire department thing.
Okay.
I had initially become an EMT before I was a firefighter. Then I went to fire school, became a firefighter. Then I went back to college again to become a paramedic. Mm-hmm. And I was just doing that full time and completely focused on that at the time. And working a second job as well at an ambulance company. It was, that was pretty much my whole life at the time I got back into art. But with all the time I have off, with the schedule, it does allot me a lot of time to work on art.
Right.
Even if I'm not getting a lot of sleep at work, I still have 2 days off afterwards. So,
Why did you become an EMT in the first place? Was there a dramatic event or point, or was it just something that you had been drawn to otherwise?
A good friend of mine that I spent a lot of time with in my early 20s, his father was a firefighter at DeKalb County. Mm. And he had always encouraged me. He's like, yeah, you should become a firefighter. It's a great job. It's a fun job. It's an adventure. And it just so happens, like, it's one of those things. It's a lot easier to get that kind of job if you're already EMT first. So I went to EMT school and then became a firefighter. So
that's just such a badass line of work. That, I mean, you seem like a very humble person with regards to what you do, but you are making a significant life or death impact with what you do every day that you put on the uniform. So how does that...
Well, I think it's perceived that way by a lot of people. I think it's glamorized to be more than it actually is. There's a lot to it that's also very frivolous. Not every call you run is a high impact call. You know, there's a lot of people who call for our services who actually aren't in a life or death situation at all. Mm. You know, but anything from somebody bumped their elbow in a microwave at 2 a.m. to someone who actually is sick or someone who is actually about to go into a cardiac arrest or something like that. So it's just different every day.
Yeah.
And I feel like at this point, I've pretty much seen it all.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
I imagine that plays a role in the way that you think about things, because you have to be aware and alert when you're at your job, and you have to be able to have the state of mind and the awareness to react and adapt to a number of different situations.
Sure, yeah. And a lot of it after you do it for so long, it just is very autonomous. You don't even think about it that much, because it's just with all the training you have and the education you have, you know, they drill it into you over a long period of time. So it does become very natural after a while.
Got it.
Yeah.
What is your role in interacting with people in that? The autonomy aside, do you still feel the human connection of what you do? Is it better to not?
No, absolutely.
To do your work.
Yeah, I do. I definitely feel a human connection. I mean, there is a part of it where you become really desensitized to people's suffering in general. Mm-hmm. And, I think it's good to be cognizant of that, so you're not insensitive. And then there's calls where there's no doubt, like, that are, you know, absolutely heartbreaking. Like anything that involves a kid, or, you know, if somebody calls and they have cancer and, you know, they're going through a hard time, you know, there's a lot of connections with people that are, it's just very dynamic.
Yeah. Yeah. That's mentally, it has to be taxing. I mean, I think in every job, there's some aspect of stress and dealing with people in ways that affect your psyche. But when you are, it's a lot more, I don't want to say primitive, but it's just a lot more basic human connection when you're dealing with people who are dealing with health or accident related issues.
Yeah. I mean, for these people who are having these emergencies, I mean, it's a really big deal to them, even though for us, it's just like, okay, we do this every day.
Right.
It has a huge impact on someone who calls us when it's, you know, their time of need. And so it affects them a lot more than it affects us. And they remember it, you know, for the rest of their life, that moment that they had to call us. And so that's very important, I think.
Yeah.
And that's when it's important to, like I said, to stay sensitive to that and make sure that you're having a positive impact.
Mm. Well, kudos to you for being able to do that and still be aware of that, to be able to hold the tools and the knowledge that you have and to make the impact that you make. But getting back into how that ties into art and your this kind of dual life that you live, you mentioned earlier that you used the word settle down when you mm-hmm. referred to kind of getting married and settling into your career and your life routine. I want to touch on those words specifically, because how did that and your choice of those words have an impact on why you decided to get back into art? Because you've mentioned with work, it becomes kind of autonomous mm-hmm. and you become somewhat desensitized to the gravity of what you're doing.
Right. And
so did you feel the words settling down to you? Did that feel like some sort of a trap or a, was that at all a stimulus for you getting back into art?
Yeah, it definitely was. You know, because throughout my early to mid 20s, you know, life is just pretty much an adventure. You're just kind of doing whatever you want to do and figuring things out and having a lot of fun. And then as I started to settle down, it definitely didn't feel like a trap. Actually, I loved it. Mm. It was great. And I found that I had a lot more free time on my hands that I was, after being finished with going back to college for a second time and working a full-time job. And it was just the right time for me to find something new.
Right.
And to start being creative again, because I always continued being creative over the years. It was just time for me to start something new, I guess.
Yeah.
Maybe there's a part of me, like I always need to be busy. So now that all the craziness of my 20s was over, it was just the next phase to start something else.
Interesting. You are a very creative person. It's evident in the work that you produce. Did being a paramedic, EMT, firefighter, stifle the creativity? Because it seems like there's very little room for deviance from the norm in that job.
No, I don't think it stifled it. It was just where I was in my life at the time. And especially going back to school to become a paramedic, I didn't really have time for much else.
Mm.
So it was just a part of my journey, and probably a necessary part of my journey, because like I said earlier, it's really interesting coming back to being creative again after taking, you know, nearly a decade off.
Wow.
And
is that a decade completely devoid of producing anything?
Well, no, I don't. Maybe it was like 7 or 8 years where I just was just making art, like very occasionally. Mm-hmm. Just if I had some free time, I'd just mess around with some paint. But no, it wasn't completely devoid of creativity, but it's definitely interesting. It's like just starting fresh, because you're a different person after that many years.
Right.
And it was, I don't know, it's hard to describe. Like I said, just starting fresh, basically. So
what was the first project when you had made the conscious decision of, I'm going to start producing again at a high rate?
Mm-hmm.
Was it paint on canvas? Was it abstract? Was it
it was just like small illustrations,
mm-hmm.
Pen and ink. And I was actually just doing them at the time to give like to friends for Christmas, and because everyone else told me, they're like, oh, we love your art, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Small abstract pieces on like 12x12 piece of like watercolor paper. And then like I noticed like little opportunities would come up after that to like do something for an art auction. And then it just kind of built from there.
Right.
And continued to get bigger and bigger.
Hmm. So now your work, you'd mentioned that your first solo show was really different than what you're doing now. So you went from pen and ink, pen and ink to paint. Mm-hmm. Did it start with paint on canvas? And I'm asking that question because now you do a lot of non-canvas studio work.
That's right, yeah. Yeah, I was doing some stuff on canvas as well.
Okay.
Just because it was easy for me at the time to go to the store, I could buy a canvas, get some acrylic paint, and, you know, mess around.
Right.
But there was, it was a while back, I saw this piece. It was a long time ago, but it had like a big impact on me. And I don't know if it was resin or plexiglass. I don't know what it was, but there were these deep layers. And it had a matte finish too. So I didn't think at the time it was resin because, you know, usually that's really shiny and reflective. But that piece always stuck with me. And I always wanted to make work that was kind of in the same vein as that. And so I started experimenting with fiberglass and plexiglass. Probably spent about a year figuring out like what not to do, how not to break the glass when I'm framing it and all that. Made a lot of mistakes. And then finally just developed like my own little routine for using that as the format now for doing like mixed media pieces with acrylic paint, ink, spray paint. And typically it always has like a matte finish. It's non-reflective. And it's a really unique look that I feel is it's good for me because I don't really see it anywhere else.
Right.
I've always wondered if there's other people who are kind of doing the same thing as me, but I just really haven't seen it anywhere else. So.
I haven't either. I think that's what kind of makes your work stand out as much as it does and makes you such an in-demand artist. I would describe your work as sharp, colorful, twisting lines with a lot of contrast and winding. I feel like there's a lot of movement in your pieces, but it pops in kind of different ways because of the way that you contrast curves with sharpness and sharp lines and color.
Right.
How did that become your style?
It kind of goes back to my background in illustration. And I knew that getting back into doing art again, that I wanted to do abstract work. I didn't have much of a desire to do anything figurative because I love like these big, messy abstract paintings too. But I also love the clean, crisp look of like a pen and ink illustration. And so the work that I'm doing is, you know, with all these crisp lines and curvy shapes and things like that, is kind of a way of merging those two things together because it's still completely abstract. But it's a little more design oriented.
Right.
So, and I actually kind of came up with that style when I was in a period of like writer's block, if you want to call it that. And I hadn't made any work that I'd been happy with for a while, for a couple of months. And a buddy of mine commissioned me to do a painting. And I just came up with this thing, and the style kind of started there with all the curvy shapes and the twists and turns and the sharp lines. And I knew I was onto something, I think, when I made that. And I made a couple more, and the style just developed into what it is now.
Right. So it's abstract. It's beautiful, and it makes the viewer think. But you have mentioned in previous interviews, and I'm quoting you verbatim, I don't give much merit to symbolism in my work. There are no clever juxtapositions or subtext, and you go on to say that it's fairly nihilist in that way. So is there really no kind of deeper meaning to the work? And if that is the case, what is the process mentally that you're going through in creating that?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely, there's no statement to be made. I appreciate art where there is a statement to be made and there's meaning behind it. Particularly with abstract art. But at the same time, for me, when I make art, it's an escape from all the hysteria of day-to-day life and my job. And I don't want to have to think too much about it or try and insert meaning into it just for the sake of doing so. So it's very nihilist. It's just intended to be beautiful or engaging. And yeah, the process in doing that is just basically doing what comes out. Essentially sticking to that format the way my work looks and the process I used to make it. But yeah, it's just what comes out. It's just supposed to look nice and be pleasing to the eye.
Are you a nihilist?
Somewhat, yeah. A little bit.
On the theme of nihilism and symbolism, there are clearly influences to your work. There may not be this kind of explicit symbolism in your work, but what influences the style of work that you produce? You had mentioned to me in something that you sent over that you're a huge fan of sci-fi. What role does that play? And I guess while we're on the subject, what role does your your line of work as an EMT paramedic play? The different influences kind of in your life, how do they play into your work?
Well, it's interesting because the influences have always been changing over time. A lot of the influences I had at a very young age were still with me. In terms of the science fiction thing, my favorite movie of all time is Blade Runner.
Really?
And that was kind of the start of like these dystopian sci-fi realities, or not realities, but scenarios. And a lot of the imagery that you see in cityscapes, things like that. Same thing you see in like a lot of comic books, video games, certain movies. A lot of the animation I liked in my college years, a lot of that kind of stuck with me.
Mm.
And there's also definitely like a street art graffiti component that was a huge influence. One of my favorite artists of all times, Herbert Lee Creasy Jr., he was based out of Atlanta. He was a huge influence. And so you've got like all these different things, and none of them are particularly similar if you put them all next to each other. But the way I work, I've kind of thrown them all into a pot, mixed them up. And even now I'm finding my work is shifting a little bit more away from the graffiti-esque look and a little more into a modern art, mid-century modern type look.
Mm.
And so my influences are just constantly changing. And in terms of the fire department, how that plays into it, I really don't think it affects how I'm influenced, but it does affect kind of the process, because once I'm off work and I go to start working on art, that's quiet, like solitary time for me. And so it's almost like the worst, if I have a really bad day at work, maybe the work's going to be even better the next day when I get in the studio.
Right.
Because I value the solitude that much more and the quiet time that much more.
Do you find that the one piece of your professional life balances the other? Would you be kind of the same artist that you are today if it wasn't for the firefighting, and vice versa? Do you find that you are a better EMT paramedic because of the art?
I think that there's definitely a balance, because there's a part of me, I feel like I'd almost be scared to be a full-time artist because I go stir crazy. The work I do often takes so long to do. And if I was just cooped up constantly doing nothing but that as a full-time job, it would probably affect on the material I'm creating. And so it is a nice balance to have something else that I can walk away and go do something else, every third day that I do. And it's, but like I said, I don't feel like it particularly has an enormous influence on what I'm doing.
In terms of like the style and,
correct,
and the content?
Yeah, absolutely. It's really just, a lot of people, you talk to a lot of artists and they talk about like you get to a point after sitting there painting for hours and hours and hours, you got to get up and go walk away and do something else for a while. And so that's kind of my way of doing that, is having that other full-time job that I do. And who knows, maybe I won't always be doing the fire department thing, and maybe I will get to a point where I have to be a full-time artist. But I don't feel like they have too much of an impact on each other. They just balance each other out.
That's fair. Well. Do you find yourself thinking about becoming a full-time artist? Is that a career path that you would consider? Or is there something else in the works that would be used as a counterbalance to the art?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely have options, and I've talked to a lot of other artists about it. I've talked to friends about it. I've talked to my parents about it, and kind of seek counsel wherever I can. And it's something I have to be very careful about approaching, I think, because as a career firefighter, I have a pension. I have multiple retirement accounts, things like that. There's always going to be another recession.
Right.
Always. And art's, a luxury. So there's things just planning ahead. I have to be very thoughtful if I get to that point where that's something I'm going to do. But I can always, and after this year has been so big for me, I'm finding that I need more and more time to work on the art.
Right.
And that my full-time job is actually beginning to interfere with my full-time job as an artist.
Interesting.
And so there may be a point where I just step down into a part-time position as a paramedic or something like that, to support just some steady income,
right?
To open up, you know, twice as much time to work on the art. But that's all hypothetical right now.
Sure.
That's like a huge, huge leap. I have to be really careful. And I don't think anytime necessarily soon I'll be making a big change, but you never know. It is something I have to think about.
It's certainly nice to have options.
Yeah.
I mean, to be in the place that you are now where your art is gaining a lot of traction and making a big impact in Atlanta, and being able to kind of have those options still is awesome. So yeah, it doesn't seem like there's any major pressure right now to make that decision, which is great.
Yeah, not particularly. And that also, it's not just my decision. That's like my wife's decision too.
Of course.
So it would require a lot of thought, planning, and making sure it's the right thing to do for me and her both.
Right. Of course. Kind of getting back to the art itself, you've done a bunch of different types of art, and your involvement and collaborative work in the Atlanta community has kind of been, it's been varied. So I want to touch on kind of your staple studio work, which is these kind of sharp contouring lines with high contrast, high color that's moving from this kind of pop art graffiti style into a little more mid-century modern style of art. You primarily paint on plexiglass.
Yes.
Right? Yeah. So again, in a previous interview I had read with you, you mentioned that working with plexiglass is, in your own words, a bitch. But
oh,
you
yeah.
still love doing it because of the outcome of the final work.
Sure.
So why did you touched on why you went into plexiglass, but why do you continue to work on it? And what are some of the challenges with creating the studio work that you create? And why do you choose to entertain other styles and mediums of work, like street art, like live painting on canvas? What is the kind of the balance of the portfolio for you?
Well, it's definitely the majority of my work is on plexiglass. It is definitely a bitch to work with. It's very labor intensive because of the process I use. And oftentimes I'm working in multiple layers. You have to, sanding the glass, cutting the glass with a table saw, all the carpentry involved with framing the glass without cracking it, drilling holes into it. And it's extremely labor intensive. So it's very refreshing anytime I have an opportunity to do a mural or work on just like a wood panel or something like that. Those things you don't see quite as much. Like, I'm starting to do more and more murals
right.
as time goes on. But primarily, yeah, I am still focused the majority of my work on plexiglass.
Do you use acrylic?
Acrylic panel?
Paint on plexiglass, or is it oil, or is it?
It's mixed media. So I'll use acrylic paint, ink, and
okay.
spray paint.
Okay.
Usually those are kind of the three things I put in the mix.
Is the glass itself, when I think of plexiglass, I think of kind of a thin, bendy, malleable.
Yeah, some piece of glass. It's really thick.
Okay.
Yeah, sometimes it depends. Like, I'll work with a piece of glass that's like 3/4 inch thick and it's really heavy.
Oh, wow.
I mean, some of these paintings weigh, 100, 150 pounds, and some, the larger ones. And then some of it is, thinner layers where I'll stack like sandwich two or three layers of like thin plexiglass, painting on both sides. And that's like 6 layers of paint.
Wow. Okay. So how long does something like that take typically from start to finish?
Oh, it takes ages. I mean, it's there was one, piece I was commissioned to do. It was like 6 feet by 4 feet. And it was two sheets of plexiglass with 4 layers of paint.
Wow.
And I think I worked on that alone just for, 3 weeks.
Wow. Okay.
And I didn't work on anything else. And I was working on it every day. And the challenge too is because I have to get the lines like so crisp and so sharp, almost to where it looks like a print more so than a painting. That is extremely meticulous. And that's probably what takes the longest. That's the longest part for sure.
I bet. You stated earlier that you don't use any kind of pre-work drawings
right.
going in. So, I mean, that's... Tell me about what that mental process is when you are improvising for a span of 3 weeks. How do you create a cohesive piece of work when you're improvising in that many different sessions over that long a period of time?
Well, it's just like whenever you see someone do a mural, not all muralists do this, but I feel like most of them do, or a graffiti artist, like they start off with their outline.
Mm.
So I'll just spit out an outline. I'll do it, just a crude basic outline where I know kind of where most of the shapes are going to be balanced. And that's the starting point. And so from there, that's probably where most of the improvisation comes from. And then from there, it kind of paints itself almost, if that makes any sense. I start seeing, like, I know one thing is going to fit in this spot, and it just all starts coming out very naturally. And the further along I get into the process, it just kind of, it's like the process kind of takes control of itself.
I see.
If that makes any sense.
Sure. It's almost like a muscle memory.
Sure.
Takeover of of what you're doing, your actions. You, going back to the sci-fi piece of it, the colors that you choose when you say, once you do your outline, it paints itself. So the colors that you choose and the way that you've contrasted kind of bright and dark colors, is there an image in your mind of something related to whatever, sci-fi and other artists, that goes into choosing the colors that you choose to create the aesthetic that you want to create?
Not necessarily. I mean, typically I'll start off with the color palette in mind in terms of, if you know, talking strictly about the color and more so than the composition itself. That is one thing I always have like planned out in advance. Mm. That's kind of like probably the exception to planning anything in the painting at all. It's picking the color palette. And yeah, there's a lot of things like, you know, Super Mario in the Super Nintendo days.
Yep.
And the colors and the hills in the background and things like that. Or maybe certain scenes in like a certain movie or, you know, a graphic novel or something like that, that will definitely kind of, I might see something like that that I like and be influenced by the color palette. And it's definitely played a role in how I choose my colors. For
interesting.
Sure.
So going off of that top idea, do you want your pieces to emote a certain feeling or expression in someone? Do you keep that anywhere in your mind when you're creating? Of what is the viewer going to feel or see when they see this?
I don't know. I think I just paint like what I like. Mm. It sounds kind of selfish, but there's another artist who's a friend of mine who, she told me something that was really good. It's a really good piece of advice. You know, sometimes if you're talking to someone you get introduced to someone who like just bought your piece and you're talking to them about the art, it's better actually to let them talk about what they see in it rather than you talking about what you see in it as the person who's painted the image. Because it almost takes something away from that person when maybe what you had in mind isn't what they see. And so I just paint what I like.
Right.
And what I feel good about. And a lot of times, you know, different people are going to see different things in that. And that's a good thing about abstract art too. It's very open-ended in that way. And so I actually just like hearing what other people see in it. And right. Sometimes actually I'll hear it is oftentimes synonymous with the same thing that I, you know, that I put into the work.
So, that's cool.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that's gotta be rewarding to be able to hear people identify with a piece that you've created in a similar manner that you did when you were creating it.
Absolutely. Yeah. It feels good. It's better than someone telling me like, oh, it looks like a face or, yeah. You know.
That's funny. Do you get that?
I used to get that a lot.
Okay.
Before I started doing the kind of work I'm doing now. Back when my earlier stuff was much more loose and much more abstract and less like design oriented, I would get that a lot. I'd, you know, work really hard on a piece and someone would be like, oh yeah, I see the face right there. And it's like, oh, I, you know, that's not really what I was trying to do, but okay.
Right.
But that's just the way it goes. I mean, with abstract work, people are going to see what they're going to see.
So kind of going back to the lack of symbolism and subtext and your somewhat nihilist view of the painting, having someone find meaning and symbolism in that, how do you react to that? Is that almost, kind of to your point, going against the intention you had in creating it? Or do you find that as kind of a hidden reward to to the work, that somebody was able to find some meaning in it.
Yeah, it's definitely rewarding. You know, because I don't feel like people have to feel the same thing I do. And if someone says that, like, the paintings really resonated with them and they felt something, or it reminded them of something, that's great. That's a home run, you know. And it's kind of like you just make the work and set it free. And it's as long as it resonates with people and people like it and people, you know, give me good feedback, then that's enough for me.
So do you think that art as a whole, visual arts, have to have meaning to have an inherent value, whether or not the artist intended for them to have meaning?
No, definitely. They don't. I think it is important, though, for, you know, not all art has to have meaning, but it's important for, you know, obviously for some art to have meaning. And then, and a lot of that goes into other forms of art other than just paintings or murals, you know, music and film and writing. It's very important to have meaning in those things. Mm. But, you know, with visual abstract art, I don't feel like it's necessary. I like the idea that it can coexist in the same realm as other art that does have a lot of meaning and commentary. So I just like seeing all different types, you know.
Do you find that your work is shown in shows typically alongside art that is similar, or is it shown as a kind of contrast to different styles, mediums, different levels of meaning or expression?
I've found myself in both situations, I think, doing a lot of different shows. It has been, some of my works has been shown alongside more figurative work or work that is actually making a statement. And then I've also been in shows where rather than everything being so different, there was the work from all the artists was much more cohesive.
Right.
I kind of felt that way about the Sublime show at Kyle Inn.
Yep.
All the work went really well together. It all flowed kind of into, because each artist has like a different section of the gallery.
Right, right.
And so just walking through the gallery, all the work flowed really well together. And it was actually, it all had a very similar look, but a lot of the work was different in terms of meaning, you know.
I agree. I mean, I think that there was a lot of color, certainly in that show.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of things really stood out. There was a combination of abstract pieces and kind of pop art, more graffiti art. There's also a lot of kind of different media with Blockhead showing.
Oh yeah, definitely.
I just thought that was a phenomenal show, and I think that Kai did a really good job pulling that together. And your pieces obviously were beautiful in that show, and I think they're still up, or are they now?
No,
down?
They just came down.
They just came down.
They're getting ready to do. Let's see. Friday night, they're doing the opening for the new show, Infinity.
Infinity, that's right.
Yeah, all female artists.
That is cool.
Yeah, it's going to be a great show.
Yeah, I gotta actually text Kai now that you remind me to tell him I'm going to be out of town for that. But yeah, that is really cool that they're doing that. I know a couple of the artists that are being shown in that. So, but you're still, where is your work up now outside of
Kyle Lynn's? Essentially like my resident gallery. So
okay.
I don't really show work anywhere else. I mean, there's like a few like small exceptions, you know, doing like a drink and doodle or something like that, or like the live painting I'm going to do this weekend. But essentially that's where all my work is featured.
Okay.
Basically almost all the work sold
that
I did there. So there's a small handful of pieces left.
Nice. Okay. Well, congrats.
Thanks. Yeah. Yeah, it was great. Huge success. And the pieces that are left, they're still at the gallery.
Mm-hmm.
So if anyone, you know, the gallery's open Wednesday through Saturday, people can come look at it anytime. So,
nice. Yeah. And do you still have the pieces that you did with the Familyhood show up at Octane?
Yeah, it's still up, I think. Unless it's sold, I'm not sure. But yeah, I think it's still up.
Nice. Well, hopefully it has sold. And congrats on the work that has sold.
Thanks.
But talking about kind of where your work is up and kind of some of the stuff you've done, as well as the work that you have coming up with Big Bang for Outer Space. Since 2016, which was your first solo show, to now, you have done kind of, again, as we talked about earlier, a lot of collaborative work with different Atlanta artists. You've done a lot of different showings. You've done murals. You've done studio work, Drink and Doodle. You were quoted in a previous interview. Again, I'm pulling a lot from kind of stuff I've read up on you, that networking is key. And getting into this Atlanta art scene, which is fairly deep, and there's a lot of just like breadth and a lot of different players and a lot of different types of work. And it's very much so about who you know.
Yeah.
And who you're able to connect with and how you're able to get your art shown. What was the process of you getting more involved in the Atlanta art scene? How did networking play a role in that? How did you kind of start working with the people you're now working with for shows and for collaborations and things like that?
I mean, a lot of it was very natural. So, you know, I got back into art. And when I made the choice to do that, I was nobody. Nobody knew who I was. I didn't have work anywhere. But the more I started putting my work out there, it's just naturally going to work out to where you start getting to know other people. And I feel like networking is almost kind of a bad way to put it, because networking is more something people look at a way of like rubbing shoulders with people.
Yeah, it's kind of corporate.
Yeah, and it's much less, I would say, networking, but more actual, like, sincere relationship building. Mm. So over the years, I've just gotten to be friends with more and more artists. And the thing I like about Atlanta is a lot of us are very like-minded, and a lot of us are friends. It's not like ultra competitive.
Right.
And everyone really supports each other. And everyone, you know, really shares the opportunities that are out there that other people might not know about. It's really shared throughout the community. So a lot of it is just good friendships, to be honest. And everyone kind of lifts each other up, and as opposed to just rubbing shoulders and using people to get ahead. So it's been really satisfying to be a part of the scene in Atlanta and know that it's not like a dog eat dog type scene, you know.
Right. Where was your first solo show, your first studio show?
Yeah, that was at Made Again in MN Park.
Okay.
And I did my second solo show there too.
Awesome.
Yeah. They're great. I love them. Margo runs a great place over there.
Made Again.
And they do shows. They do rotating exhibits. Mostly solo exhibits, yeah.
Awesome. I've actually not been by there, but I feel like that's a top priority now.
Yeah, they've always been very good to me. And that was I have a lot of good memories doing like my first show there.
Right.
For sure.
How did you come to meet some of these artists that you do collaborative work with now, like Blockhead and Peter Ferrari, you know, doing Forward Warrior, and, you know, Kai for Kylan Art?
Yeah. You know, I think in terms of meeting Margo from Made Again, she found me showing some work at a silent auction. And then, you know, I put a few pieces, she welcomed me to put a few pieces up at Made Again. And the work was doing pretty good. And then I just started making more work and then doing a couple of shows there. I actually met Yukai through Lila Brunette.
Okay.
Yeah, so I did a piece for her. She commissioned me to do a piece, and he saw it, and I feel it apparently resonated with him. And eventually we ran into each other, and he just showed a lot of interest in getting to know me. And it just kind of took off very naturally.
Right. You
know, he came over and did a studio visit, and we kind of just started off slow. He asked me for just a little bit of work, and then, you know, more work. And then before you know it, I was doing a couple of shows over there. And
that's awesome.
And then obviously getting to know some of the other resident artists from that gallery, it was just very easy to go ahead and start collaborating with them. And me and Leela in particular have done a good handful of work together now at this point. And I think Forward Warrior was like the first official collaboration with me and her.
Okay.
And it turned out great. It's a very natural, like we work very well together. And nice. Yeah, and that's probably like my favorite part to think about where I'm at now is collaborating with other artists. It's a lot of fun because you can, you know, kind of just have fun and do what you want without too much pressure.
Does that change the process for you at all? Does that change the content, the style when you have to blend with another artist's style and process?
No, I don't think particularly. I think just kind of having an idea like where you want to go when you start. And usually I find it's really easy. I haven't found it too challenging to kind of merge styles with other artists.
There's never really like a conflict of process or content or composition.
No, I don't think so. I think it, I've been pleasantly surprised at how easy it is. Mm. You know, you'd think it would be much more of a challenge to, that you might end up butting heads with one, you know, someone else, but it's really easy and it's a lot of fun. Like I want to continue doing a lot more collaborations for sure.
Does size play a role in the content and the composition? Because a lot of your work is defined by these very sharp, crisp lines, which you mentioned are very meticulous and very time consuming. Does what you produce change based on the size of the work?
With the collaboration or just doing like my own work?
Well, either.
Okay. Well, no, not really. I don't feel like it does. It's very scalable. So I've been able to do it. I feel like the larger it is, the easier, particularly if I'm doing like a mural.
Right.
Because it's always quicker to work with spray paint. Mm. But other than that, now, and like the tiniest piece I've ever created was for the blockhead. And I actually loved that. That was great. And I was able to kind of scale it down and do the same thing.
Right.
And it's definitely been interesting, like experimenting and doing something that tiny to doing mm-hmm. something like a big wall. So it's very definitely scales in either direction very easily.
What can we expect without you giving too much away from what we're going to see at the Big Bang Outer Space Party? Do you have anything in mind? Are you trying to go different? Or are you trying to go?
I don't know. I think just I'm going to go pick out my colors this afternoon, actually, and then just whatever comes out is going to come out.
Nice.
I don't know. That's kind of what's fun about it. But it'll definitely look like my work for sure.
Have you ever painted live in front of an audience before?
Yeah, I have. I haven't done it. I guess Forward Warrior would be kind of be considered an audience because sure. there's so much social interaction, but that's a lot different. You know, you're out there and it was really hot out there too. You're just trying to like drink water and paint constantly and talk to people. But, I've done live paintings before back when I was doing, my work was a lot different. And I think at the time I found it to be pretty challenging, but I've gotten to the point now where I feel like I can do it pretty well.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, I'm really sad I'm not going to be there, but I hope to see a lot of videos and pictures, and I'm excited to see the final product. And I'm sure you're going to have a blast with that. But no, it's very cool that you've been able to integrate so well into the Atlanta art scene through these relationships that you've built. Another thing that you mentioned in that same interview that I was reading up on was it's really important to find good mentors.
Yeah, definitely.
So to you and in your work and in your life in general, who have been some mentors that have played a big role in your work as an artist?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, having a mentor in any endeavor you do is crucial. You've got to have somebody who's going to keep you on track and guide you. I feel like Margot from Made Again was definitely a big mentor for me. A friend of mine, Gina Thompson, she's a professor at GSU. She's given me a lot of good advice over the years. Yukai's definitely been, have given me a lot of insight into the gallery world. And my friend Lilo Brunet has always given me good advice. So I've kind of had multiple people who, I don't know if I'd officially call them mentors, but they've kind of been, it's kind of been a mentor-like relationship. Mm-hmm. They've always helped guide me and give me good advice and kind of helped me steer away from bad things and stay on track. And so And now I'm at the point where I don't know if I consider myself like successful enough to like try and reach out and give good advice to someone else, but I'd like to, you know.
Sure. I mean, I think that I think there's less boundaries than people think to being a mentor to someone. Just the fact that you have come to where you are now means that you have all of that experience to be able to impart onto someone who's undertaking a similar journey.
Yeah.
Or is facing similar challenges.
And it is just good to give back. Like, I wouldn't be where I was today without the help of a lot of other people.
Right.
And so it's important not to just take that and walk away with it. I think you have to give that back.
Sure.
I think it's hugely important, you know, to be supportive of other people who might need that help or need the insight or advice. So I don't want to be arrogant about how fortunate enough I've been to have that kind of help. I do want to definitely give that back.
Well, hell yeah, man. I think it's important, and I don't think that there's anything really inhibiting you experience-wise or interpersonally from giving that advice back. I think that any up-and-coming artist or creative would love to just sit down and pick the brain of someone like yourself who's been through that journey and who's been able to make the impact that they make. So I hope that those opportunities continue to grow for you.
Yeah,
and you get to give back in that way, which is fantastic. Kind of the last line of questioning that I usually bring everything back to is always Atlanta related, with this podcast being very much so Atlanta kind of focused. You have a unique perspective on the city because you contribute and interact with Atlanta and the people of Atlanta in two really interesting and different ways. Through your work as EMT paramedic, as well as through your work as an artist, you get to interact with different parts of the community in different capacities. What is the lens through which you now view Atlanta as a city, as well as Atlanta as a place to create?
Yeah.
Based on your jobs multiple and your perspectives.
I mean, I love Atlanta. So I'm from here. I've been to other cities and, you know, like I just got back from LA and I'm like, wow, LA is great. Like I love LA. But after about a week, when I got back home, it felt great. I think Atlanta is always going to be home for me. I think it's vastly underrated. But people you've seen over the past couple of years are starting to pick up on that. There's a lot of people coming to Atlanta. There's a lot of people who are starting to see kind of like what a hidden gem it is.
Mm.
I don't feel like Atlanta is thought of as like one of the great art cities, you know, like New York or LA or Paris. But I think it is beginning to emerge. I think there's been an explosion of art and creativity in Atlanta over probably the past 5 years or so. I don't know if other people feel that way, but I feel like I've seen that for sure. I mean, I love it here. It's great.
Are you more or less hopeful or neutral in that topic when it comes to your day job? You obviously interact with a lot of kind of traumatic, I would say, and high stress situations that give you a unique perspective on the city and the people in the city. Has that changed your view of Atlanta for better or worse? Does it give you hope? Does it give you anything with regards to the city?
I feel like I'm more indifferent about it. I think a lot of people think that I work for City of Atlanta, and I actually work outside the perimeter. I work for a smaller county. And so it really hasn't had, it's like you said, it's almost like I live two different lives.
Mm.
So it hasn't had much of an impact on how I view the city or interact, you know, my daily interaction in the city. It's just totally separate. You know, it's like an entire separate life.
Do you think it would if you worked in the city of Atlanta? Would you ever work in the city of Atlanta?
I would never work for City of Atlanta Fire Department, no. But it would, it probably would. If I worked in the city, yeah, it would probably change the way I interact with the city as an artist as well, I think. Yeah, for sure. Because those two things, there's no... getting away from that would be where I spend 100% of my time at that point. And obviously there would be some overlapping of the two.
Right.
If that were the case.
Yeah, of course. Well, for whatever balance that you've struck that seems to be working so well for you as an artist and you as a professional, keep at it, because I think that we're all, as recipients of your artwork, better off for what you're creating. But what is what's next outside of the Big Bang and Outer Space Project? What do you have coming in the immediate future down the road art-wise?
That's a good question. I think right now, actually, it's kind of nice, to be honest. Things have slowed down a little bit, just mm-hmm. enough for me to be able to breathe after an insanely busy year. So right now, there's kind of some things that aren't confirmed yet, but a couple of things that are going to be coming up with a little bit lighter of a workload than I had through the rest of the year. So the year's kind of winding down. It's actually very nice. So I can't really say too much of what I'm doing right now, but there's a couple more things for the rest of the year coming up.
Well, good. I'm glad that you are able to take a little bit of time to...
Yeah, that's nice. I need it.
Get some rest and kind of flex the mental muscles and recharge that creativity and slow down. So that's great. Well, Phil, that's kind of really everything I wanted to talk about, unless there's something that is pressing on your mind. Anything you want to kind of dive deeper into?
No, not really. No. I just really appreciate you having me on here. It's really cool that somebody actually wants to hear what I have to say. So,
well, I love your artwork, and the people I know who talk about you and your artwork couldn't recommend you highly enough to be on the show. So it was a real pleasure meeting you at the Familyhood show when I did. And really, really exciting to have you on the program. But where can people find you online, on social media? Where can they learn more about you? Where can they connect with you?
Yeah, the best, obviously the most accessible, the easiest way to find me is on Instagram. So my IG tag is at @PHarrisATL. So, and also my website, www.philharrisatl.com.
Nice.
Yeah.
And you've got kind of the full range of works up there.
Yeah. It's a really great, but Instagram in particular is the best place to see like my entire portfolio.
Nice.
Spanning back, several years, where my website, I'll keep that a little bit more current.
Fair enough. Well, Phil Harris, full-time paramedic EMT, also full-time artist, Atlantan, and just a really all-around cool, interesting person, and someone who I've really, really enjoyed talking to today. Thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to another episode of the Show ATL Podcast, the podcast where we seek to find and highlight Atlanta creatives and creators and tell the stories of the people and organizations making amazing things in our city. I am your host, Parsa Benamory. Our show today was produced by Mr. Coleman Erkins with help from myself and Corrigan Nolan. Our music is produced by Relax with Alex. Want to thank all of the guests who come onto this program and tell their amazing stories with us and share with us, as well as to our wonderful listeners who continue to support us week in and week out. If you love this episode, if you love this show as a whole, if you like Show ATL and consider it something that you listen to frequently, please consider giving us a 5-star rating or a nice review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or whatever else you use to listen to your podcasts. Please consider supporting us if you'd care to. Again, we're a small team working to put together this show for you every week. And we have a Patreon page, www.patreon.com/showATL. You can give a one-time donation or a recurring donation. All funds will be used to make this show better and better and better for you. So we would greatly appreciate that. Thank you again for listening. Thank you again for supporting us. Thank you again for being a part of the conversation that we continue to have day in and day out to make our city a better place, a more creative place. We will catch you next time. Thank you. Goodbye.